It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
Welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast, week four of the season, but realistically, week one of the season, because Southeastern Conference play starts this weekend, 6:30 p.m. Saturday night, SEC Network, Missouri at Lexington, Kentucky. Kentucky, one of two teams in the SEC East that Missouri has not yet lost to. And Matty Mauk, seven touchdowns, no picks in two games against Kentucky. So maybe the Big Blue brings out in Matty Mauk what Missouri fans have been hoping to see. To talk about the Kentucky Wildcats, we're going to bring in Tom Leach. He does the radio play-by-play for Wildcat football, also Wildcat basketball, but obviously more concerned at this point in time about the Kentucky football team. So we're going to talk to Tom about Kentucky, about Missouri, and this matchup. And we're starting off, if you're Kentucky's defense, Russell Hansborough, concern number 1A?
Well, I think certainly they would be planning on him playing from everything I've heard. That's what I would think from all the reports I'm seeing from Columbia way, and I would assume that's what they're thinking as well. But I think they're equally concerned with Mauk. I know some Missouri fans may be down on him, but if you're from the Kentucky side, he's played very well both games against Kentucky. I want to say seven touchdowns, no interceptions. So they have a high level of respect for how he's played against Kentucky. He's hurt him with his legs, and Kentucky had trouble with that from Greer last week of Florida. So I think, probably Matty Mauk is just as much of a concern for them.
Wanted to ask you, primetime kickoff, what do you expect the atmosphere to be like? I mean, fairly comparable to what it was for Florida last week?
Fairly. I don't think it'll be as hard to sell out as that was, because Kentucky was coming off the win at South Carolina. Excuse me. And then going up against Florida, team that Kentucky hadn't been since 86, I think the sense among the fans was that this was going to be the year to finally end that streak. And I think there's been a bit of an emotional hangover here. I don't think that's the case with the players. I think they've got a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder from letting a game slip away that they had a great shot to win. But for fans, I think there's more of an emotional hit that they took, and it's taken them a little while to recover from it. So I think it'll be appropriately enough for Missouri, a little bit of a show me crowd that they'll need the team to kind of bring them alive a little bit. So I think the Kentucky side will be hoping for some kind of big play early to get them going.
How big is this season for Mark Stoops to kind of take that next step and probably hit six wins and get to a bowl game? I mean, obviously the recruiting has been pretty impressive, especially on paper. You can see some of it starting to come together on the field. But how big is it just to get that hurdle cleared?
It would be a huge boost. It's not any kind of an issue for job security. But I think to certainly keep the fan optimism rolling, they need to get to postseason play. And, you saw that in the game last week, how eager Kentucky fans are to jump on the bandwagon, and they just need a little encouragement in the form of a big win or two. And so if they can get one of those along the way or two, get to a bowl game, then the main thing from the team standpoint is they get the extra practices, and they're really young, especially on offense, so that would be tremendously beneficial. And then I just think from a standpoint of keeping the momentum going with the fan base, otherwise, as far as the program, there's nothing job security related, and I really don't think if that a bowl is a requirement to hold the recruiting class together. They've got a really tight group, several of them based not in Kentucky or close by. So I think that they're real solid there in terms of holding on to these guys. But getting to a bowl game certainly wouldn't help, wouldn't hurt in that cause.
Right, and Kentucky's schedule, I mean, you look at it, Eastern Kentucky, probably a win. Vandy, probably a win. Charlotte, probably a win. So, I mean, that's five, looking for that sixth one. This is this to me is a game that could really put Kentucky on the right path and maybe starting to see the other side of that hill. Do you think this is viewed around Lexington as a pretty crucial game for this team?
Yeah, I do. And I thought coming into the year they, to be able to get to six wins the way the schedule played out, they had to have at least two in September. Thought they'd get the first one against Louisiana, and the next three were all going to be toss-up games. And so far, it's two for two on being toss-ups, and they won one of them. So that was the minimum I thought they had to do. But from the fan perspective, I think they really want to see them get this win. And I think there would be a sense among the fans anyway that would almost guarantee that they're going to be going to a bowl game.
Yeah,
but they still got to take care of that business.
Exactly. I want to ask you you know, do you do the basketball down there as well on radio?
Correct.
Okay, so you are like I am, getting about 2 weeks away from the time of year where you pretty much don't sleep for about a month and a half, huh?
Yeah, we also get horse racing is huge here, and so they've got the Keeneland race meet that hits in October, and it's even bigger than ever this year with the Breeders' Cup races coming to Keeneland for the first time. So you've got that. Basketball starts to gear up, and just as soon as the race meet is over, basketball games actually start. So, by the time December rolls around, the students will abhor getting to finals. I'm thrilled when they get to finals because that means only one game a week for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. Well, Tom, I really appreciate it, and I don't think a lot of people would have said a couple of years ago Kentucky-Missouri may be one of the most fascinating games in the SEC, but I think after this weekend, one team starts to set its sights on what can we do to contend for this division, and the other one maybe is setting its sights more on what can we do to get to the postseason.
Yeah, probably true. And I think a lot of similarities, so looking forward to a game much like the last two for Kentucky and really for the Tigers as well. That's going to be hanging in the balance when the fourth quarter starts.
I want to ask you one more thing for the Missouri fans making the trip. Where's the one place, either Friday or Saturday, that they need to hit up in Lexington to kind of make this a good experience?
Oh, probably the quintessential place is a place called Ramsey's. There are a few locations in town. It's a locally owned place. That's good. And then there's a place called a couple of other places that are similar. Cheddar's is a great one, owned by a former Kentucky football player, so a lot of cool pictures in there of Kentucky sports. There's I think two locations for that, and then there's a place called Coba Casino that's in that same family of restaurants. It's a little more upscale and really nice, so probably Cheddar's or Coba your best bets.
All right, well, Tom, appreciate it. Have a good call on Saturday night, and looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That is Tom Leach, the Kentucky football play-by-play man on the radio. Wanted to get some insight. We're trying to hit up more, radio play-by-play color commentators, just kind of give you guys different voices on the podcast this year and different takes on programs and opponents that Missouri's going to play. And Tom and I talked about it. I mean, these are two programs two teams, I should say, not two programs, but two teams that I think are in very similar spots. Offense is struggling. Both scored 9 points last week. For Missouri, it was enough to win. For Kentucky, it wasn't. Both have a quarterback that maybe not everybody's sold on right now, and a backup that was one of the most highly touted guys in the country that a lot of fans want to see on the field. Both have good underrated running backs, good solid defenses, and I don't know what to think of this one. I mean, I've got to make my pick by, Friday afternoon, and I still don't have any idea which way I'm going to go on this one. All right, going to look around the SEC like we do every week on the podcast, and we're going to start in a place where I think things are probably a little bit hectic right now, down in Fayetteville, Arkansas, talking with Trey Biddy, hogsports.com. Trey, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you taking some time. So this has not quite gone the way Arkansas fans anticipated it was going to go for the first 3 weeks. I mean, what's the attitude? A lot of outrage down there?
There's a lot of disappointment, and you can imagine some. It ranges from anything from calling for the coaches and KD's head to people saying settle down and let's see what happens, and pointing to the fact that they still haven't played an SEC game. And you can view that good or negative. The Toledo game, really a perfect storm for Arkansas. Just everything seemed to go wrong. You look at the red zone. They were 1 of 5 in the red zone and only had 3 points. 8 penalties for 85 yards, including 6 holding penalties. So one thing after another seemed to go wrong for them, but they should still beat Toledo, even if that's the case. And then Texas Tech, they just didn't have an answer. They could not not stop Texas Tech on third down. They spread them out and have a really good quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, and couldn't stop them and then couldn't make the play down there at the end when they needed to. So this is another difficult challenge. Obviously, Texas A&M is playing really well. You know, Arkansas is pretty banged up. That's definitely one reason you can point to for their slow start. But, you know, last week it was more about the defense not getting it done than the offense. And that's an area they have to shore up. They lost four draft picks last year on defense. I think a lot of people thought that they would continue and carry things over into this year after things went so well last year. But it looks like they're having a little bit of problem figuring things out on that side of the ball.
Yeah, offensively, I mean, Brett Bielema's teams can always run the football. I understand losing Jonathan Williams was a big blow before the season. Did you anticipate it would be this big of a blow?
Well, you knew it was going to be a blow. I mean, he's a leader, back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher, almost 1,000 yards the year before, but definitely a guy that leads this program. And I think that's, in a way, something that they're missing a little bit. They haven't just lost Jonathan Williams. They also lost Keon Hatcher, who's their starting flanker, Cody Hollister, their starting split end, Jared Cornelius, their starting slot. They've lost their three starting wide receivers, their top running back. That's difficult. And they've also lost their their third running back and their top fullback in Cody Walker, who may be back this week. So that's a lot to overcome. But still, I still point to the defense as being some big problems. I definitely, you know, I didn't think that was the best play call down there on third and two against Texas Tech when you needed a touchdown. Third and a short two, and you've really just been running straight through them in the entire second half. And they threw the ball, got the offensive pass interference call, which backed them up, and got a bad throw out of Brandon Allen, and that pretty much did it for the game. So that was pretty questionable there at the end. They do have a change with offensive coordinator. Still no excuse ever for Arkansas throwing 53 times, especially against Toledo. And then Texas Tech, they toned that down. I think Brandon only threw it around 20 times or so, and they got back to the running game. So they're going to need to do that against Texas A&M. They're going to need to possess the ball. A little bit different style of spread with Texas A&M, but still very difficult. Better overall talent, Christian Kirk, Pete Newell, Josh Reynolds, Trey Carson. You know, both quarterbacks are pretty dynamic players, so they'll have their hands full again this week.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, just looking at Arkansas' schedule, somebody at Arkansas had to have made somebody in the SEC mad. I mean, A&M, at Tennessee, at Alabama, Auburn, at Ole Miss, at LSU, and then Mississippi State and Missouri. I mean, I'm not sure there's a single game you look at. If you're going by the odds, what's Arkansas going to be favored in maybe two of these? That is an absolutely brutal schedule.
Well, it's like that every year for Arkansas, and it probably will pick off some Missouri fans, but Missouri has no idea what kind of schedule Arkansas goes through every year. Last year, this was rated by most like the third toughest schedule in the country. Last year it was the first, and the year before that it was the second. So it's the same thing. And to be honest, really the schedule shapes up about as good as you could hope for. When you talk about looking at it at the beginning of the season anyway, it shaped up about as good as you could hope for. When you start off with UTEP and then you progress a little difficult, more difficult to Toledo, and then more difficult home game against Texas Tech, and then you've got Texas A&M in a neutral environment, a split crowd, and then you go to Knoxville, and then you go to Alabama. It's a schedule that progressively gets tougher and more challenging, and then you get a bye week, and you get Auburn at home. So to me, yes, it's going to be like that every year when you're Arkansas, but that's about as good as the schedule could possibly shape up. And you do have the back-to-back road games. There's a 35-day span between games in Fayetteville, which due in part to the way they scheduled with the three non-conference games at the beginning. They really didn't have a choice but to book them back-to-back road games. And you have the game in Dallas, so there's like, I think it's actually 34 days between games in Fayetteville. So that's the one thing that jumps out as a negative, but as far as the way it sets up, it's about as clean as you could hope for.
That's interesting. One more question for you. Does Brett Bielema enjoy the controversy? Is he just too honest in front of microphones?
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. I mean, he's going to be himself. And to be honest, he's asked these questions. He was asked about the Ohio State deal and really happened to be watching the Monday night game and saw that stat come up when they were comparing Ohio State's schedule to some SEC school schedule. He was asked about it. And it's funny to hear people say he needs to stop focusing on other people's schedule, like he's focusing on someone else's schedule, like that's his focus. Come on.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Really blown out of proportion, I think. The guy speaks his mind. It's amazing to me that people in the media would criticize this guy so harshly when we're stuck with coaches that so often just sit there and give you the same old, you know, the same stuff out of their mouths over and over again, and we're begging for somebody to say something. And here's Brett, who can be pretty entertaining, and, you know, he gets it wrong one time, and people just come after him. So I'm not necessarily defending what the guy does. I'm just saying me as a media person, much rather cover Brett Bielema than Bill Belichick.
Hey, I agree. I love things like that. It gives you something to do every week. But, Trey, appreciate it, man, and we'll catch up with you down the road this year.
Anytime, guys.
Trey Biddy, hogsports.com. Apologize for the connection. Not the best, obviously, some issues there, but hopefully you guys can still hear Trey and kind of understand what he's saying, get the message across, all that, because I did want to check in Fayetteville, because if there's anywhere in the SEC, there in Auburn, people aren't real thrilled with how things have gone. And we checked in at Auburn last week, so I wanted to look in on Arkansas this week. Missouri doesn't play them, obviously, for a little over 2 months, but Razorbacks and Aggies, 6 p.m. Saturday night in Dallas. Wrap things up looking at what, at least for Missouri fans, should be the most intriguing SEC game of the week outside of maybe Missouri-Kentucky, but I would argue Florida-Tennessee might be even more entertaining. We're going to talk to Landon Watnick, InsideTheGators.com. Landon, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Hanging in. So Florida 3-0, maybe, I mean, obviously New Mexico State, hey, that's an opener that you don't draw much from. Last 2 weeks, close wins, but wins, so I imagine Gator fans feel pretty good about the way things have started.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty optimistic feel, but I'd probably say more on the lines of cautiously optimistic. This Tennessee game this week should really tell a lot about this Florida team. I mean, I had it pegged as really the defining game before the season even started. And things have kind of gone somewhat as expected. I mean, Florida fans expected the team to be either 2-1 or 3-0 heading into this matchup. So this game's really going to be a big key to kind of see really where the Gators are at. It's a good benchmark game for sure.
Yeah, and I think really there are two games, Missouri-Kentucky and Florida-Tennessee. I think you're going to have two teams come out of this weekend thinking they've got a shot to maybe push and stay in this division race all season, and then you're going to have two probably go, well, okay, we're not winning a division, let's try to get to a bowl game. I think these two games are both kind of separate the contenders from the non-contender.
Oh, I certainly agree. I mean, obviously you got Georgia kind of the favorite right now in the SEC East, but push for, you know, that second and third spot is pretty much up for grabs right now. So it should be interesting to see, especially with those two matchups, where things kind of stand.
I imagine that Florida, I mean, obviously they want to get to 4-0 and all that, but I think everybody knows how big this game is from Tennessee's perspective. I mean, I think the opinion kind of flips on Butch Jones if he gets beat by Florida this weekend. I imagine that Tennessee or Florida would not only enjoy winning, but would maybe enjoy twisting the knife a little bit in the Volunteers.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tennessee is one of Florida's most heated rivals. I mean, Florida's dominated a series of 10 straight wins dating back to, I think, the last Tennessee win was 2004. I mean, wow. Florida's had the upper hand. Has, you know, just simply won the turnover battle in all these matchups. It's been pretty significant from that end. So, I mean, that's a key that I'm looking out for Saturday. If Florida's defense could really amp it up and, you know, win the turnover battle, maybe it could help out this offense a little bit. And I think that's honestly the key to the game. I mean, Florida's offense has been kind of shaky these past few games. And they're going to need a little bit of help from the defense. I mean, you had Jalen Tabor, who's going to be suspended for the Tennessee game. I mean, against ECU, he had a pick six. Plays like that is definitely what Florida's going to need. The big interception returns or even pick sixes, you know, just forced fumbles, that type of deal. So,
yeah, defense obviously still the strength of this team. Have you seen signs, though, that in the first 3 weeks this offense is better than it was under Will Muschamp the last couple of years?
Well, it's certainly a more complex system. It's better tailored to the players. I just think Florida right now is kind of lacking a little bit of talent from a personnel standpoint. I mean, obviously you got guys at receiver like Antonio Callaway, who's impressed. Brendan Powell's shown some nice things. DeMarcus Robinson hasn't been as impressive up to this point in the season than we thought he'd be. At the same time, though, it's been kind of surprising to not see him too involved in, you know, as a deep threat. He's been more of a, you know, just a short yards guy on screens and intermediate passes. But it should be interesting to see. I mean, Florida's just lacking some talent in some areas, especially along the offensive line. I mean, that group's been kind of outmatched. But, yeah, I mean, it should be interesting to see. I mean, you know, the group does have, you know, pretty good design as far as the offensive playbook goes. I mean, McElwain's definitely made some advancements there as compared to Muschamp. So.
Yeah, looking at Florida's schedule, I mean, I just talked with Trey Biddy from Arkansas, and I was kind of in awe of their schedule, and now I look at Florida's schedule. I mean, I guess this is what the SEC is, but their next four games, Ole Miss, at Missouri, at LSU, home against Georgia. That is a difficult October.
Oh, yeah, it's a gauntlet. I mean, if Florida could really go 2-3 over these next five games, I would consider that a win. I mean, you're talking about heading into, you know, the final month of the season, which is pretty easy for the most part. I mean, you got South Carolina, Vanderbilt, or first game is Vanderbilt, then South Carolina, then FAU, and then Florida State. So, I mean, if Florida could enter that month 5-3, I mean, that would speak volumes of the job that McElwain would be doing and, you know, would speak positively for the future of this program. So, if Florida could, you know, lead the stretch with a 2-3 record, that'd be great.
Want to wrap up with this, Landon. Obviously, you saw Florida-Kentucky last week. For the Missouri fans listening to this, give them a scouting report on what you saw out of the Wildcats.
Out of Kentucky?
Yeah.
Let's look into Kentucky a little bit. I mean, obviously, Florida's defense totally, especially the defensive line, shut down their offensive line. I mean, they couldn't handle the pass rush against Florida's group. I mean, Florida's got one of the better defensive lines, though, in the SEC. But Kentucky was outmatched from that standpoint. It really made Florida's secondary not have to put as much pressure or as much run support in that regard. So they were more focused on their assignments, and that really shut down Patrick Toles. I mean, he completed only 8 of 23 passes against Florida. It was a tough day for him, and Florida was getting after it. Overall, 6 sacks from the defensive line. So Florida really shut down them from that standpoint. As far as Kentucky's defense, I mean, Florida's offensive line is not that great, so Kentucky's defense really shut down Florida's run. Did a pretty good job in that department. And, I mean, their linebackers and secondaries were okay, but not too impressive. I mean, so it'll be interesting to see from that regard. But, I mean, Florida's defense really gave Kentucky a tough time last Saturday.
All right, well, Landon, appreciate it, man. Florida-Tennessee, the 2:30 game, I guess the 3:30 game where you're at, and certainly everybody going to be watching that one. Thanks for the time, and enjoy the weekend.
Thanks for having me on. Hope you have a good weekend, too.
Landon Watnick, InsideTheGators.com. That's the rival site covering the Florida Gators. And Florida-Tennessee, really interesting. I mean, 10 straight wins for the Gators. If they make it 11, I think things get real hectic in Knoxville real fast. After Tennessee lost the heartbreaker to Oklahoma, to start the SEC season with a loss to Florida is not what Volunteer fans are expecting. Gators have done, you know, what I think most people would think they would do. Calling at Kentucky a big win for Florida is a little bit of a surprise, but that's the case. Florida 3-0. Again, that one's 2:30. Missouri and Kentucky shortly after that one ends, 6:30, on the SEC Network, and really a pivotal game for both teams, folks. We talked about it with Tom Leach. I want to thank him. I want to thank Trey Biddy from HogSports.com and Landon Watnick, and we will be back next week on the podcast previewing Missouri's second Southeastern Conference game of the season. Will we be talking 3-1, or will we be talking a team looking to come home and protect a perfect record against South Carolina? Find out 6:30 Saturday night, and we'll be back next Thursday.